This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and teching out with us here this evening on Tech Talks. My name is Grant.
And my name is Mitch.
That's right. We're gonna swap things around for you tonight and see if I can't throw Grant for a loop. Anywho, in all seriousness, no, I am Mitch.
And I'm Grant.
And we thank you for joining us this evening. We are joined in the studio by another station member here, Tim, if you want to hop on and say hello.
Hey there.
All right. Tim's going to be joining us tonight as we curate this curious evening full of questionably comforting items. Starting off with Apple. Apple made a big splash this week in tech news. First of all, I'm going to just toss this out there. They announced their new lineup for next year of iPhones. They're going to retain the iPhone SE, which is more or less a mix of the iPhone 5 and iPhone 4 that, you know, for people who enjoyed the smaller iPhones like the iPhone 5, they sort of retained that. So it's, you know, available for that. Then they said they were keeping the 6S and the 6, I think. They announced a 6S, not a 6 Plus. I think they're retaining just the 6 and the 6S. And then they also announced the 7 and the 7 Plus, if I'm not mistaken. And feel free to correct me on that, Grant.
Yeah, they announced that they're going to be retaining basically a small size along with a new generation of the medium and large size, I guess you could say.
Yeah, the way it was described in the video is that the 6s have been moved down to middle of the line and the 7s will be taking their spot at the top of the line, whereas SE is staying at the very bottom as the more or less it's going to be their phone they actually maintain for some time with the updates.
Yeah.
In hardware and whatnot, each year they're going to update it so that you can, you know, still buy a relatively cheap iPhone that's, you know, smaller size and honestly not as honking huge as a 6 Plus.
To be fair, even just the normal 7 is, by most people's measurements,
large.
At least a medium-large phone at this point. It's a large device, and I've always thought that the iPhone Plus size has always seemed almost kind of... It's well in that range that it's almost kind of too big. And there's a couple of those absurdly large phones. I mean, every company produces at least one device that's just too big. And it feels kind of silly, but maybe that's just me. I'm sure there are people. Maybe there's like actual giants that enjoy using the 7 Plus because it feels like it's the right size. Maybe Shaq likes having the...
Well, and that's understandable. You're right.
Yeah.
That's definitely understandable.
There's also one Shaq. So it always seems kind of weird to me.
Then the other thing I'm going to do...
Hey, you think they're going to bend again? Or do you think they finally got that sorted out?
Hopefully they did get that sorted out. The last thing I'm going to throw on there before I toss it to you and let, you know, you and Tim hop in and start breaking this down a lot, or we'll break it down all together, whichever one, is the fact that iPhone announced, and this is the part that really floored me, that they will no longer be offering 16 gigabyte size phones. Every phone that they had offered previously on their sizes has now been doubled. So the smallest size iPhone you can now purchase is 32 gigabytes. Then after that, it is going up to the 128 gigabytes and then 256, I believe, are the three levels they're offering now.
I don't remember what the middle tier was.
I'm pretty sure it went from 64 to 128. Gigabytes, and then same with the 128, which used to be the biggest iPhone you could buy, has been doubled to 256 gigabytes. And so they announced that those would be universal or unilateral, and that, you know, no more 16 gigabyte iPhones. It's just not a thing anymore.
Well, they've been making a push for years to get away from talking about storage in particular, and talk more in terms of the things that people are actually using that storage for, whether it be video or audio or photos. So as they're building up like larger just sensor sizes and things, like they're building what, a 12 megapixel into the new camera?
Oh yeah. The new ones, the sevens actually have two cameras on them now on the backside, which is something we're going to break down here in a little bit too. But yeah, there's a lot of changes with this iPhone 7 that's really breaking with convention.
So as the media gets bigger, like they need to keep up. Like a 16 gig doesn't go as far as it did.
Especially when you're considering that we're dealing with 4K video now. You know, things like that. It's the same things happening with TVs, same trends. You're seeing the pixel resolution on TVs starting to bump up.
Yeah, you're having to put full-size processors on TVs now because...
Just to process the graphics coming in on the signal.
Stacked on top of handling all of the arbitrary things your smart TV is doing. I mean, it feels kind of silly, but we're having to put full-fledged processing units into a TV just to keep up with it being smart. And I was going to say... You said you were surprised that they went from 16 to 32. I didn't feel like I was as surprised.
Well, I was surprised they doubled everything and absolutely cut the 16 gigs. I mean, they're not even offering the SE in 16 gigs anymore, according to the announcement that I watched.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm... I mean...
I guess what I'm saying is I've been astounded that they haven't done it up till this point, and I'm astounded that they finally did it, that it took them this long to do that. Especially considering here a couple years ago, it became very well known that if you buy a 16 gigabyte iPhone, open it up, pull it out of the box, and go in and look and see how much storage is available on the phone, it doesn't have 16 gigabytes.
It has
less because the OS is taking up part of that 16 gigs. And I believe someone sued Apple and got a settlement out of it. Over false advertising.
Yeah, we're moving into iOS 10 right now.
Well, that too, yeah.
And iOS 8 was almost 5 gigabytes in size, and that's why they outmoded the
16.
8 gig.
Yeah.
And so likewise, I can understand why they want to outmode the 16 gig if we're talking about the combination of 4K video along with an operating system in the gigabytes range. You know, we're talking about a pretty hefty system, and 8 gigs definitely isn't going to cut it.
No.
16 gigs is questionable at this point, and I can understand why Apple would want to move away from making questionable decisions, I guess.
We'll talk about that in a minute. So with that, I think we should dive right in and start breaking down the new features on the new phone, what's different, what's new, and what everything means.
Okay, so one thing is that the home button now has that touch sensitivity to it, so you're going to be able to graze. It will be able to comprehend everything from grazing the home button all the way down to pressing a full push.
So like you could tap the home button twice without actually pushing it in, and it would recognize that, similar to how an Android device will recognize two taps on the screen to open the screen.
Yeah, and so in that kind of a way, with this force sensitivity, they're calling it, I think it gives them a great potential.
Basically, they took the Apple Watch's screen and made it a smaller home button, right? Because the Apple Watch's big thing was it had the touch sensitivity on the screen, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so they integrated that into the home button now as well. So they're going to be able to, and I really hope they use it for customization. I think there's a lot of potential to have these pre-programmed taps and knocks. And I like the idea of a long hold on, or an especially hard hold on the home button as well. As designating certain actions. There's a lot of, I hate to say it this way, but there's a lot of right-click-esque actions that you can make by pressing the button firmly that I'd like to see them incorporate.
Yeah. Tim, you have anything to add on that particular bit?
So I haven't actually held a newer iPhone that has the Force Touch, I guess they're calling it. It seems like a great idea. It seems like something that would be useful, especially where they let you peek at things.
Yeah.
Long press to peek.
Okay.
So I think
it's
a cool
idea.
That. Yeah. I think some apps have like a preview mode where you can hold on. I'm making this up because I haven't used it, but like a calendar app to see your appointments and things like that.
Well, and that does make sense, you know. And as far as what you were saying, Grant, about the customization, I do hope that that's what it is, because on for example, my new phone, the Samsung S7 Active, the active button, you can actually set what it does. Like, you can set clicking it twice will do a certain action. If you, a long click will let it do something, or a short click will take you to a specific app.
Yeah.
And, you know, customization like that is, in all honesty, been Apple's real downfall compared to the Apple-Samsung rivalry.
Android has long
or Android, yes,
been able to have those kind of customizations. Virtually every Android on the market at this point has some kind of custom button on it that you can long hold or double tap to open certain apps, or even some of them are context variant. They do different things in different contexts.
Which is also why, you know, Android has rivaled Apple so much, is because either you can have an Apple and conform to how they want you to experience your phone, or you can have an Android and customize your experience with your phone, you know.
I think they have a lot of potential here to retain their environment and yet really grow the way in which people use it.
Exactly. So the next big thing I want to point out on the iPhone is the one that's the obvious thing that everyone's been talking about. And that is the fact that they have removed the headphone jack.
AirPods.
Yes.
Everyone will have AirPods.
I want your immediate reaction just on the removal of the headphone jack.
In all honesty, I don't even need to give my reaction, because the internet has already exploded. Even when this rumor was first dropped, instantly the meme base for it was just automatically generated. There automatically was at least 10 different memes the day the rumor dropped about the fact that there was no headphone jack. And like the one you showed me earlier, where it was someone holding a headphone cord and said, you know, When you're in the car and someone tries to pass you the head or the aux cord, but you have an iPhone, you know, you can't do that anymore.
But really though, like, what is the impact of this? You know, it's culturally kind of a thing, the idea of like riding in a car with your friend, passing around the aux cord,
exactly,
and playing music. Does this disrupt that sense of community,
you know,
that
in,
happens?
I think in 10 years, when everyone's right, when the pre-owned cars that everyone, you know, the second-hand or hand-me-down cars everyone has Bluetooth-capable systems in it, I don't think it's going to be a problem then. But for now, when, you know, people are driving, like, for example, I drive an 03 Buick. You know, I have a CD player and a tape player in mine, and I've had to have one of the tape player aux cord cassettes in order to play music over my car things with, you know, my car speakers, without actually having to go and buy a new stereo system to put, or, you know, put in the console.
Yeah, but even if you had Bluetooth in your car, would you want to be constantly switching it to each member of the car in a way where you can just unplug a cord and pass it?
Yeah, I definitely understand from that aspect too. I mean, that's going to make things really annoying too.
Right now, it's really cumbersome to do that. I think we might see Bluetooth stuff changing in the future as people go more wireless to accommodate that, to be able to like quickly select from the devices around you. There are already a few cars I think I've heard of that do that, where if you have several family members who switch off driving the car, it allows you to program several devices in that any of which will be recognized, makes it a little easier. But I agree
but
with you.
But the problem is too, most cars, as a you know, sort of double-edged sword to that notion, most cars won't let you swap things like that if you're going down the road. They lock out the ability to change those kinds of settings, because they're assuming, okay, you're the driver, you're playing with this, you need to be focused on driving.
Yeah. Well, that's a larger problem with the touch screens and dashes, which is kind of a bigger
topic. Another issue that we're not going to broach today. So then, as a result of Apple removing the headphone jack, they are more or less forcing change more aggressively than they did with like the USB-C in the MacBooks. They tried to more or less force that to be a thing, because was it the last generation of MacBook Airs that only had the USB-C?
Yeah, the one that just came out this year. Yeah.
It only had a USB-C, which is basically, it's a the way to explain USB-C is that everyone knows that USB cord that you normally have, that you would plug into a computer or what have you. It has exactly one way it can go. And the most annoying thing about it is, if you try to put it upside down, you realize that you're putting it upside down.
And then you flip it over, and somehow that's upside down too, and you go back to the first one,
and then
suddenly
realize,
it fits.
Yeah. So USB-C sought out to eliminate that by making it universal, that you could just plug it in and go. You know, sort of similar to the lightning jack on an iPhone. You know, there's no longer one set way to plug something in. And, you know, I think the Lightning Jack was actually what sort of prompted Apple to try to take on the USB challenge, because they saw, you know, if you remember on the old iPhone 4s, those wide base chargers, I think they were the 8-pin chargers they had.
Yeah.
They had to go in a certain way. They had to go with the little symbol facing on the top. And they changed it and saw how positive everyone reacted to, oh, I don't have to worry about it anymore. I can just plug it in with the Lightning port, or a 14-pin connector, as it's called, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so then they tried to tackle USB-C, and they actually got a lot of pushback from that, because so many accessories are still made exclusively for USB type B, which is the type that we just described a minute ago that everyone is used to. So,
And I think that USB-C is less of a deviance. Like, I think USB-C is going to see a lot of uptake everywhere, whereas I don't think that the Lightning connector is ever going to make it out of Apple. I don't think that
that Android might pick it up or anything like that.
No, I don't see that happening. And I think that Apple, if somebody's going to if somebody's going to move away from using a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, it's going to be Apple, because they have the customer base that they're just reselling into, and they're going to be on board for wherever Apple goes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a harder sell for everyone else who has been using that same connector for the last 50 years and has a bunch of hardware.
The other thing, too, is it's kind of a smart business move on Apple's part, because here they are, you know, I don't know what the numbers are on as far as how many people in the U.S. own an iPhone, but it's a substantial amount. A substantial amount of our, you know, generation owns an iPhone. And so from moving away from that, basically, if someone wants to buy a set of headphones, you know, the Bluetooth headphones, I think the cheapest pair you can get is like, you know, $30, which are double the cheapest pair you can get of the, you know, 3.5 millimeter headphone jacks that we're all used to. So, you know, you're going to see a lot of that going. Not to mention that Apple now has a monopoly on their specific headphone connection as far as the AirPods. You know, they're the only ones that currently make it. You can't go out and get like a Skulls brand AirPods or a Bose brand AirPods yet.
So they're not just a fancy Bluetooth headset. They're their own Apple tech.
They're their own separate thing, I believe. And I think this is a perfect time to sort of take a pause really quick.
I got a stat check for you really
quick. Yeah, stat check for me. We'll be right back in just a minute, and then we'll move on. This is a perfect segue into the AirPod part of tonight's discussion. So keep it locked all the way to the left. Thank you for tuning in and teching out with us.
There are currently 164 million estimated smartphones in the U.S., and of those, 63 million are iPhones. There are 1.4 billion smartphones in the world. 800 million of them will be Android, and 300 million are Apple iOS. So that's just the breakdown on.
Well, we will definitely revisit those numbers as soon as we come right back here in just a couple minutes, so keep it locked all the way to the left for this riveting discussion. All right, so with that, everyone, that's what's going on around town here in Lexington this week and weekend. If you're just now joining us, we've been breaking down the Apple announcement from this week, talking about the new iPhone lineup and a lot of the changes that are coming with the iPhone 7. Once again, I am Mitch.
I'm Grant.
And we are joined this evening by our other guest.
Hey, I'm Tim.
That's Tim. All right, so with that, we're going to recap those numbers that we just talked about as far as the number of iPhone users and comparative to the number of smartphone users in general.
It's estimated that there are 164 million smartphone users in the U.S., and this is as of 2014, so this number's probably actually even up a little bit. And of that, Apple has a substantial portion of that with 63 million iPhone users. So we're talking about that'd be 3 out of every 8 people who have a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a substantial share, considering it's a single phone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whereas Android is an operating system that is spread across
Samsung, LG, HTC, Motorola.
Yeah, probably 10 different companies.
Google itself, the Nexus series. Yeah. So and more than 5, you know.
Yeah.
Which probably accounts for why it is a much larger base of the operating systems.
Oh, yeah. I'd be severely concerned for an operating system that had such a diverse market and yet couldn't outgun what was up until recently one phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, sort of the impact of that is that basically, if every iPhone user went and got a brand new iPhone 7 when it comes out, then how many people would be without that headphone jack if they went now? Just to sort of put it in perspective.
If you mean if every
iPhone user currently upgraded immediately to an iPhone 7.
That'd be 63 million people. That'd be about 20% of the U.S. population.
Well, and keep in mind that the new iPhone's going to be bundled with a Lightning to headphone adapter.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be built into the phone, but as long as they've got that in their pocket or backpack or something like that, then they won't be completely dead in the water.
But that's what kills me, is the idea of having to bring an adapter me just all the time just to listen to music.
Well, that's kind of the Apple story, though. I mean, for years and years, we've had anytime you want to take your Mac and do like a presentation on somebody's projector or you know, show it on your TV or something, you're going to need an adapter to change your Thunderbolt, your display port, to HDMI or VGA or whatever else you have.
Yeah.
That I feel like this is sort of nothing new for Apple. I was reading an article this morning that was something like all 21 dongles that Apple provides, that Apple makes, and it was laid out in one article, everything from, you know, conversions for video out to, I guess Apple still makes a modem, like a USB.
I think they do, as far as for like internet.
Yeah, like
they still do make an internet router. Actually, and it's sort of this white square rectangular tower now.
Oh, yeah. No, I was talking about like a USB modem, like dial-up modem.
Apparently,
that is still available.
Know about that.
But, that's still a thing?
Apparently. I can't imagine anyone's buying it. But yeah. Just to go back, I mean, I don't think that kind of carrying adapters is going to be something that's completely foreign to Apple users. Especially like borrowing a charge from somebody, right? Like most people have some kind of a lot of people, especially in
they'll bring their own cord.
Right, they'll bring their own
and
cord.
And just ask to borrow someone's block.
Sure,
yeah.
Well, that's actually one of the interesting things to me. Two things there. One, yeah, I guess it's nothing new for Apple to be used to carrying around an extra adapter, but it is something that's very new to the phone market in mm-hmm. general, to have to carry around an adapter for day-to-day needs, you know?
And I guess maybe to be using it in public, like if you've got this stuff, if this thing's stuffed in your shirt pocket with a headphone cord running out, and you've got this, like, 4-inch white cable that's, like...
That just speaks to me as 4 more inches of something to disconnect and get a bad connection, and then you have to pull your phone out of your pocket and figure out, okay, is it the white cord, or is it my headphone plugged into the adapter, or...
And it's not even magnetic, right? Like, they couldn't have taken the MagSafe
to snap
technology
into the...
So your headphones don't tear out. I don't know. That's all. I think the people who are going to buy the phone will figure out how to work around it.
Oh,
I think,
I'm sure.
I think they're passionate enough about the platform that they'll stick with it. But it would be something of a deal breaker for me.
It would for me personally, but I've never been a big Apple man to start with, so.
Right. I mean, it sounds like we're 3 people talking about Apple who aren't terribly
familiar with
it
anymore. I mean, I used to use Apple back. I had an iPhone 5 up until about 2.5 years ago, and so I was more familiar with it. But we actually have had several people call in throughout the show, and the last caller asked that I bring this up. He said that being an Apple user, he wouldn't really mind having an adapter if it was a small thing that would literally just plug into the Lightning jack and just sort of be part of your phone until you need to charge it, and then unplug it.
The unfortunate truth is that it's not quite as small as I think I would hope for it to be.
Well,
it is, what, like a 3 or 4 inch cord?
Yeah, it's a short little stubby cord.
Yeah, as opposed to just literal, honestly, if you have a wireless mouse or a wireless keyboard, like those little Logitech plugs is what they probably could do.
A little half inch stub would be fine in my mind.
And then, you know, he also said that, you know, the only thing would suck would not being able to charge your phone and listen to music at the same time. However, interestingly enough, Nintendo solved that problem a long time ago. I believe they did. It could be one of two things. On the old Game Boy Advance SPs, you had a charging plug, and then you also had a what would be called the COM port.
Yeah.
And the adapter either went in one of those two. For whatever reason, I remember it going into the charging port, and then it would have a, you know, another port on the back of it, sort of like a Christmas light plug, where, you know, one end has the prongs that go into the outlet, and then the back side of it are another two slots for another prong to be daisy chained into. I remember being able to do that with my charger, you know, plug it into the adapter, plug the charger in, and then it had a little dangle down that was, you know, for the headphone that you would plug in, you know, 3.5 millimeter headphone jack for.
Are you suggesting that they make another adapter?
Yeah, yeah. I think they could be smart about if they do make an adapter. You know, I feel like the community that uses Apple products, if they really don't like the fact there's no 3.5 millimeter headphone jack anymore, which I have a feeling that that is going to be the case, then they're going to come up with some way to get around it. Well,
there has been an announcement. Belkin has announced that they're making a dual lightning adapter, right? So you can plug one lightning into your phone, get two ports out of it. So one of them can be used for charging while the other one has your second adapter for your headphones
hooked up,
or your lightning headphones.
A lightning splitter.
And you know, something like that is bound to happen. I mean, Apple had to have known that things like that were going to crop up. You know, and so the thing is, I think, I can't remember if the lightning is still copyrighted. I'm fairly certain it would be, and that, you know, if you want to do anything that has a lightning port on, if you have to license it from them, or I don't know how that works.
As I understand it, the physical hardware is documented. You can build your own lightning devices, but in order for it to be compatible with an iOS device, you have to be certified through their Made for iPhone program.
Okay,
so that is a certification process. If you're not certified, I'm not sure how it's implemented, but your device won't work with iPhones.
Yeah. It'll probably come up like it says, this device is not supported for iPhones or something like that.
Yeah. And that's the great thing about Bluetooth, too, is it's kind of a cheat around that system. You don't have to be MFI certified for Bluetooth devices, so you can use whatever your Bluetooth headphones are with your iOS device.
We hope. I hope Apple wouldn't be, in all honesty, stupid enough to put a lockout in iOS 10 to where if it's not the AirPods that you can't use Bluetooth headphones. That would be really dumb.
It could change. I think they would draw even more ire for making a
decision. They would.
Like that.
If they did something like that to where they forced you, if you wanted to listen to music through headphones, you had to buy their AirPods, they would have an open revolt on their hands. Mm-hmm. So surely they're not going to do something like that. But if they did, that would just blow my mind.
So the AirPods.
Yeah,
let's
break these down quick.
We've broken suit on that. Let's hit the AirPods. I'm a lot of things about the AirPods. Some of the first words that come to me are baffled.
Mm-hmm.
But
they look like the headphones that Apple normally has, and they just literally snip the cord at the bottom of the actual plastic casing of the headphones.
Yeah.
They look super easy to lose.
That's one thing. I just feel like they're still going to find a way to get tangled. Not sure how, but they're going to manage it.
These new cordless headphones are still going to get tangled.
Well, they have to get charged. And they only hold, I believe,
I don't think that would be that much of a problem, though, especially seeing as we've been moving a lot towards inductive charging for a lot of things. Just set your headphones down on a pad and it charges them up at night.
Those things are tiny, though, and so I don't know the exact specs on them, but if they do have wireless charging on them, it's going to be slow.
Oh, yeah, but I mean,
the battery capacity in something like that is so small.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's
got like a neck piece, sort of like most Bluetooth headphones, but I don't think it does it?
I don't think so. They're not the first people to tread this either, go down this road. There have been at least two Kickstarters I can recall for similar products, like similar just kind of small in-ear headphones, Bluetooth headphones, and the ones that I've seen have some solution where, like, there's a carrying case, right? And the carrying case has either contacts or an inductive charging solution.
Okay.
So you keep them in the case, and as long as they're
in
there,
they get
charged.
And you plug the case in. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think, like, a contact-based, you lay them down on some kind of a surface that has small contacts where you insert them into little pegs. I think
I don't even think it'd be that complicated. I think it would be more of, you remember how in like the iPhone 5, whenever they first came out and they went away from the you know, full round headphones to those ones that were sort of angled to where the speaker was a lot smaller and directed more towards your inner ear.
Yeah.
Those had to sit in the case in a certain way, and then you had to wrap the cord around them. They could set it up to where those contacts, you know, just had, you know, you have to set those in the case in a certain way, which wouldn't be obviously anything new for Apple. And then, boom, there you go. You know, they're on the contacts because they have to be set in a certain way. Yeah. You know,
I think that's a pretty suitable solution, I guess. I don't know. It's still, I'm surprised at how small these are.
Yeah, they look very flimsy. I mean, they don't look durable at all. Or functional, really.
They seem like they're pretty, they're fine as far as durability of the material. They're all one big continuous piece for the chassis. Still, what bothers me is they're so small that I can't imagine these things ever holding a practical charge.
Yeah.
Well, more than that, they're a one-size device, right?
Yeah.
Like one of the big things that people seem to have problems with is having earbuds that stay in their ears, especially through physical activity. And I kind of wonder if Apple has taken a stab at solving that without having like the custom molded or different size gel earpieces that some of the headset manufacturers have used.
Well, and honestly, it's always been a problem for Apple. Their headphones have never been, you know, customizable. They've always been one size fits all. And actually, I couldn't use the headphones that came out with the iPhone 5, those angled ones where they went away from the full round speaker on the end of the headphones that you saw with the iPhone 4. I couldn't use those. They would always hurt the inside of my ear. You know, that just the contact and the pressure of having to keep that hard plastic right in my ear like that would always be very painful. And I know that was something that Apple has been struggling with ever since they went to those kinds of headphones. And these look to be, you know, very similar in their design. And I, you know, I'm with you. I wonder how they're going to make them to where, you know, they work for physical activity, you know, without having the gummy surfaces or like the actual plastic bud inserts that are of different sizes, you know? Because like Grant said earlier, for as far as the actual size of the phone, you know, how's Shaquille O'Neal going to get those things to stay in his ears? You know, he's got bigger ears than everyone else does, you know?
So on charging, it looks like they do have a charging case, which works a lot like at least one of the Kickstarters that I've seen before, where the case itself has a battery that will store extra charges for you, so that when you insert the AirPods into the case, it'll charge them, yeah. And then at some point, you have to charge the case also.
You like charging things.
Yeah.
So I made a charger for your charger.
That you charge, right.
That you have to charge.
Yeah.
But yeah, they say on their website 15 minutes of charging gives you 3 hours of battery life. So
wow, 3 hours, that's not very long.
Well, that's only 15 minutes, right? That's
I know.
So I use a smartwatch, and the way it was pitched a lot of times is 15 minutes on the charger will give you like a day of battery life, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think 15 minutes is a nice time period to advertise. That's like a shower, that's your breakfast, that's, you know, something where you've got some other task you can do for a bit while you wait for it to charge. And a lot of people, if they're already using some kind of a fitness device like a Fitbit or something, then they have some sort of routine around that, maybe not every day, which you would have to for this, but there's probably still opportunities in your schedule to charge it.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm just curious what the 5 hours is, the max battery.
That's the max. Yeah.
That's still not a whole lot.
It's not. It won't get you through a workday.
No. Oh, well. So with that,
we're going to take a break.
Yeah, we're going to take a break. We're going to play some music. Then we'll come back. We'll talk briefly about
some other stuff going on.
Yeah, other stuff going on. So keep it locked all the way to the left. This is WRFL Lexington. And thanks for tuning in and teching out with us.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm, and of course via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
All right, Lexington, welcome back. You are tuned in to WRFL Lexington. More specifically, you're tuned in to Tech Talks. So thank you for tuning in and teching out with us this evening as we have explored the wonderful world of Apple.
That's right. You're tuned in here with us, and we're going to be charging on forward. Mitch?
The last thing I want to say about the Apple thing is actually completely unrelated to everything else before. This is actually something to do with the Apple Watch. So Pokemon Go actually announced at the same event this weekend that they were coming and actually making the Pokemon Go app compatible with Apple Watch. So you can receive notifications on your watch And what it is Apple has more or less told the Apple Watch to view when you open this app and are running it as a workout, because it's seeing, okay, you're walking so many kilometers, so it'll show like your top two most eggs in your, you know, in your game, and it'll show how many kilometers you're making. It'll pop up and say, hey, there's a Pokemon nearby, and then you could pull out your phone and catch it, or, you know, what have you. So it's really interesting to finally see that they have utilized or came out with a compatibility for a wearable. Aside from the one that, you know, Pokemon Go is planning on releasing, that's its own sort of wearable that has, I believe, said it's going on sale later this month for $35. So with that, there hasn't, what I wanted to bring it up is the fact that they haven't said anything about Android Wear yet. They haven't said if they're going to make it compatible with any Android Wear devices yet.
They have announced that there will be support. They just haven't been specific in what they're going to be supporting, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They've said, just kind of in a general sense, we will have Android, but not yet, and we're not going to be specific about which ones yet.
We'll get to it when we get to it, you know, man.
Of course. To be fair, I feel like Android itself is kind of the stumbling block. Once you get past that, I feel like there's going to be a lot of overlap because of the nature of Android, that rolling it out to this device and then to that device will be, you know, pretty easy to go to the next, to the next, to the next. And it'll just... I don't even know if they would do any more than just a base template for it. And I don't know.
Have they said anything about the Apple Watch version of Pokemon Go, like what it's going to be reporting? They did an
on-screen demo.
Okay.
So they actually had, you know, someone from Niantic was, I think it was the project leader, and he was up on the stage and he was showing, you know, the things you could do, and they had the screen simulcasted onto the stage. So there's actually a comprehensive video of what all you can do.
So they're doing more than just notifications.
Well, I don't think so. I think it's just notification-based that, okay, it'll recognize, hey, you're near a Pokemon, you can pull out your phone and catch it. Now, I did show that you could get Pokestops. You can actually spin and get your Pokestops without ever pulling your phone out, which is going to be super useful. And I don't even think that the Niantic wearable does that. I think the Niantic wearable only does buzzing when you're near a Pokemon and, you know, press the button to catch it, and it's, you know, a crapshoot if you get it.
From what I've seen, notifications are kind of the easiest thing to do because there's usually a built-in framework for it. So yeah. I would think Android Wear would be an easy...
Well, it's like, even if you leave it turned on and in your pocket with your location services on, it won't even give you on-screen notifications, not that I've seen.
Yeah, and those would be really easy to forward to a wearable. Yeah.
And that's what amazes me, is that they haven't done that until now. So, I don't know. Like I said, it was a very limited demo that he was doing. But I did want to bring that up, and the fact that it is coming exclusively to the Apple Watch before it hits Android. So with that, let's take a break from talking about phones and everything else, and let's move into talking about schools. Most specifically, let's talk about ITT Tech. It has been confirmed, I believe confirmed earlier today or yesterday, that they sent out an email saying, we're closing our doors. It's game over. We're done. What is the article I'd sent you, Grant, say?
Last week, they had announced that they were going to end
new
enrolling
admissions.
Students, that they were closing to new enrollments.
And would just finish up who they had currently enrolled.
Exactly, yes. But this week, they have announced that they are actually going to be discontinuing, and this is coming from their email, quote, discontinuing academic operations at all of its technical institutes permanently. So they're talking about a much more immediate
stop
shuttering here.
Yeah.
This isn't a grandfathering out. This is
a door slamming in your face.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, too, is the fact that ITT Tech is a for-profit college. And, in fact, most of the colleges you see commercials for on TV are called for-profit colleges, which means they're actually openly traded on the stock market as a business.
Yeah.
And ITT Tech is one of them. University of Phoenix is another. I believe SNHU, Southern New Hampshire University is.
Yeah.
Just to name, like, the three biggest ones that I've seen. and us growing up all the time, every single day we would see an ITT Tech commercial. Growing up, watching cartoons and stuff, which is interesting to see that it's flopped. And the government has really, from the article I was reading, the government has really been going after and cracking down on for-profit colleges.
Well, what it is that the Fed this year, actually just a couple weeks ago, it's what's been causing all of this, made the announcement that they were going to stop giving out assistance and loans to students who would be going to these for-profit technical schools. And there's been a lot of controversy over the years, back and forth, about the exact level of education that these for-profit colleges provide. And
to give you scope, Trump University was a for-profit college. It was in the same category as ITT Tech.
Yeah, it was a business college. And so likewise, there's been a lot of allegations through the years of various groups and various for-profit colleges in the industry who've been accused of not providing substantial enough of
an education
for the cost. And so in response to that, the Fed decided this month that they were no longer going to be issuing grants or loans to students who were attending these for-profit colleges. And as a result, it's put a lot of strain on these for-profit colleges, because it's not even that it removes an incentive so much as it adds an impediment to reasons
receiving
why
money.
People would want to participate in these for-profit colleges.
Yeah. So it's definitely interesting to see more or less the end of an era. We grew up and ITT Tech was always there. They were always claiming they were growing. And in fact, they did grow over our childhood into what it is today. And I guess they just finally couldn't keep up, especially if they were going to lose that much funding through federal application or federal student aid money.
Over $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough to drive a lot of things into the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really
can't just drive it, pile drive it. Like jump off the tightrope in WWE pile drive, except it's real, not fake.
No, it absolutely. This is the, when you're talking about the $500 million in federal assistance, these students that were receiving just evaporating, not only is that encouraging people to transfer away, it's discouraging people from coming, and that loss of revenue puts such an unbelievable strain on any institution. I'm not surprised that they're shuttering. Maybe I am surprised that they've made this announcement right now.
So quickly
that there was no attempt to ride the storm on this, or at least it doesn't immediately appear to be.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, for-profit colleges have had problems like this for quite a while. Like it's you can't let a year go by without a pile of articles about how for-profit colleges are charging a lot of money for programs that produce people who are not well-equipped to enter the job market, which is their primary design, like versus something like University of Kentucky, where they're more of a general education kind of a thing, the theory that you need to learn how to learn
or like a research institution.
It's not a training kind of a thing, and ITT and Spencerian and for-profit colleges generally are closer to training institutions, I think.
They're like big trade schools.
The college version of a vocational education school.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with those, but
no.
when you're charging as much as a regular institution, research institution or otherwise.
And you're taking, federal student aid money at the same time,
And you're not doing what these people want you to do for them. It seems like these people are probably better served by an actual, like a college education at a regular accredited
or even a community college, a state institution.
Sure.
Yeah, something that has I suppose more oversight. There's been a lot of problems with the utter lack of transparency that, for-profit colleges have been able to get away with for so long. And I think that's really what's caused this cat and mouse game that led to this
disclosure.
This decision by the Fed, which is this is the first of many dominoes that I think are going to fall, that we're going to see the crumbling of this industry in the next 6, 12, 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to be able to live out this storm without really completely rearranging the way that they approach it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing, too, I almost wonder what the impact it's going to have on state institutions. You know, because, for example, a lot of people who try to go get a degree from a for-profit college, it'll typically be through an online course because they have a day job and, you know, they can't do night classes or for whatever reason. And not a whole lot of universities have very comprehensive online programs that are state-funded. You know, most of them are exclusively for-profit colleges that offer those kinds of online programs. So I wonder if you're going to see a lot of universities stepping up their online programs.
I have to hope so.
Because I would.
The one impact I don't want to see out of this is a decrease in total enrollment.
Or a decrease in the ability of someone to get that kind of degree because a traditional college education, it doesn't work for them.
Absolutely.
You know?
The one thing I'm terrified of is that people are going to leave an institution like ITT Tech and not enroll anywhere else if their credits can even transfer, they don't go anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Because they are predatory, but they provide a degree whatever the value is. It's questionable. Nonetheless, no degree is still a problem. And the idea that people might be leaving these institutions and not going somewhere else and finishing is really a setback.
Oh yeah.
So
definitely.
We really have to be careful with how we approach this problem and how and you're right, it's gonna take flagships and state institutions stepping up
and picking up the slack, you know,
their ability to work effectively for the people who are doing a day job, who don't have the time, who are trying to get into night classes and are trying to get into online courses. There's not enough focus.
It would be interesting also
in
actually
world.
To see, you know, some public institutions open up, you know, because, for example, we used to have here at UK a College of Undergraduate Studies, and that's been folded into something else, but that's neither here nor there. But to actually see universities that are state-funded open up like a College of Vocational Education and sort of, you know, fill that spot that for-profit colleges would fill, you know, because, you know, if you're wanting to be a network guy, you don't necessarily need to go for a 4-year degree in computer science to do that. You know, a degree from ITT Tech or, you know, actually, my local high school, the guy who does all the networking for my high school district actually just went and got Cisco certifications and all the stuff he needed to do. He actually doesn't have a degree.
Yeah.
You
don't need a degree for every single job in the market. And the idea that we advertise it is that every
if you don't have a degree,
every real job it's silly, and it really only wastes people's time and makes it harder. And I understand there's a need to be competitive in every market, but we really need to take a serious look at what quick degrees and to really bring the value of something like an associate's to the table in a whole host of vocational skills, something that a lot of flagships really are afraid to touch.
Or they've slacked off on offering associate's degrees. You know, it's really difficult to go out and find a state institution where you can just get an associate's degree and be done and not have to worry about it anymore, you know? But with that, we're about out of time. Do we want to try to push this over and talk about one of those other articles? Nope. All right. Well, then what we will do is we will see you all next Thursday. Thanks again for tuning in and checking out with us. We will be going out the rest of this hour with some music, and we hope you keep it locked here at WRFL Lexington for the rest of your musical evening.
All right.